2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
This is Outdoors, brought to you by Bear River Lodge. 2 hours of stories and information on hunting, fishing, and high adventure. KSL Outdoors with Tim Hughes on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
We are so glad you're with us for another edition of KSL Outdoors Radio, and hope you had a fantastic Thanksgiving with your family
at
last
Social
week.
Social Security.
Bob Grove is still with me today. And Bob, you told me a few days ago that you had a neighbor that was headed out on quite an adventure and wondered if we had a satellite phone available. I think Russ has hooked him up, didn't he?
He did. I contacted Russ. He made the arrangements, and I think he shipped the phone off to my neighbor, Mark Hodges. I had Mark and his wife, Shanti, over, my wife and I had them over for Thanksgiving. And Mark mentioned to me that he's going on a solo adventure through the Grand Canyon. I thought that would make a great adventure to follow along. Yeah. So we made all the arrangements. Mark and his wife, Shanti, own an adventure company called Wild Utah Tours, where they take people on their adventures around Southwest Utah. So it's all about adventure here.
Wait, did you say Bear Tours?
Wild Utah Tours. So they, wife.
But they take you out on bear tours?
No, not bear tours. On their own tours.
Their own tours. My goodness. I was anxious
to find. There ain't no bears around here.
I was anxious to find out how many people are lined up to go see bears. I'm glad it's their tours. Mark Hodges joins us right now. Tell us about Wild Utah Tours, Mark.
Also a family-owned guiding company down here. We live in Laverkan, Utah, right near Zion. So we take people out on hiking adventures, driving adventures, do a little four-wheeling. We pretty much do all custom and private tours. And we focus on going to off-the-beaten-path locations just outside of the park. But we can go in the park as well.
So if I called you, what would be your first go-to? I mean, obviously, Zion's right there in your backyard. But what would be your go-to for somebody that just said, look, I'm going to trust you with, putting me on the adventure of my lifetime? What would be at the top of your list?
Oh, I love going out to Gooseberry Mesa. It's a beautiful mesa just south of Zion. Spectacular views. Looking out. Panoramic views of all the kind of southern expanse of Zion. So much to explore out there. So many trails, so many four-wheel drive roads. But it's really hard to just pick one. There's so many great places around here to explore.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you've got one of your own coming up. Is this a bucket lister for you, or have you had this experience before at the Grand Canyon?
I've been lucky to do it a few times, but never solo. So solo is going to be a whole new ball game for sure. Kind of ups the ante a bit.
Bob, I'm a little envious of this. It is one of the things we've always talked about, being able to go down and do. Maybe not, a 10-day or a 2-weeker that some people do, but even just to go for 5 to 7 days would be amazing.
Oh, yeah. I've been through the Grand Canyon once on a river trip, but that was in a big commercial raft, with a motor on it. And so this is a different experience going solo in a kayak. This time of year, the water is much different. So, to navigate the river is not like it is during the summer months. And this is probably the time of year, Mark, when it's a little easier to get the permits to do it.
Yeah. What are you going to be traveling in, Mark?
I'm going to be taking a 12-foot inflatable kayak. So it's kind of, I was looking at my gear pile today. It's like, oh, I hope I can get all this stuff in there. It's going to be a challenge. I always rafted it before, And I have a raft, but this time I was like, let's try the kayak, try to go fast, try to go lighter. But we'll see how it works out. Maybe next time I'll be wanting to take the raft again.
Is that one of the positives of the 12-foot inflatable, just weight-wise?
It's one of them. A lot of people will use hard shell kayaks, but I wanted to, bring extra gear, and it's just easier to carry more gear in an inflatable. And so that's why I went with the inflatable. There's pros and cons to each craft. So it's just kind of whatever you're looking for.
Yeah. Bob, talk briefly about how the water changes this time of year. What are your expectations?
Well, it's pretty kind of lowish lows, which is good for a solo trip. The higher the water gets, the more challenging overall the river becomes. Some rapids will get a little harder when the water's lower, some will get harder when it's higher, but for the most part it's much harder and more challenging the higher the water gets. So having kind of lowish flows will be nice. It'll also make it easier for getting drinking water on the river. It won't be so silty and muddy, but it's gonna be chilly. I mean, it's cold water coming out of the bottom of the dam, and the air temperature, even though the weather's looking pretty good right now, it's going to be chilly.
Yeah.
Stay warm.
Bob, what are the expectations for temperatures this time of year down there? I mean, down in the depths of the canyon, when you get into the shadows, I would imagine it is a little nippy.
Oh, yeah. It's generally about 20 degrees warmer at the bottom. At least it is during the warmer months. But it's just a completely different environment in the winter, where in the summer months those canyon walls are just absorbing all that heat all day long, and then at night it radiates the heat, so it's difficult to sleep. I don't think that's going to be the case on this trip. I expect that it's going to be at the bottom, I would guess, Mark, I'm guessing it's probably going to be in the 50s during the daytime, maybe even a little bit warmer.
Yeah, that's what's looking like right now. At that least area to put in 50s as highs and mid-30s as lows, which is pretty nice for this time of year. That could change, if we get some weather coming in or a cold snap. But, it's looking pretty good overall for a winter trip.
Yeah, the water's so low right now, if you fall out, you just stand up.
Yeah, that might be the other reason for not taking the raft. If you run into an area where you have to walk through, I guess you could just deflate the thing and move it around the rocks and inflate it again when you get there. But how many days or nights are you going to be on the water?
I decided to go a little longer than originally planned. I'm going to be on the water for 17 days.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. You can't go quite a bit quicker, but why rush? I have the time, so I decided to make it a little longer to throw my days down there. So many great hikes to do down there. It's just lovely being down in the canyon, so
maximize
my time.
How do you haul that much water? Are you just going to be filtering water down there?
I'm just going to be filtering as I go. Mm-hmm.
It sounds like a lot of freeze-dried food to me.
With the kayak trip, yes. a lot of backpackers like food to get that many days worth of food in there, for sure.
Yeah, and Mark, if you need any extra supplies, we have a freeze dryer. My wife's the freeze-drying queen, and we have supplies that last a year.
That's kind of mine for future trips, thanks, Paul.
So we're well supplied here.
Yeah, you mentioned, Mark, you've done this before, but it was with a bigger group. Has your wife done this with you, just the two of you?
She hasn't. No, that's on the list. Hopefully I can get her out there and my son, Mason, who's 8. So hopefully I can get Mason out there on a trip here in the near future, a few years down the road.
So where do you put in? Where do you take out?
You put in at Lee's Ferry, right near Page, Arizona. And then I'm taking out at a place called Pierce Ferry, which is 280 miles downriver. A lot of people will take out at Diamond Creek, which is 225 miles downriver, but I've opted for the longer takeout.
Having never,
yeah, that's about
go, go ahead.
I was
Bob.
Just going to say that's about 100 miles farther down the river from where I took out. We took out at Whitmore Wash, but of course we took a helicopter out up to the Barton Ranch. If you took out there, Mark, that'd be a long haul with all your equipment trying to get out of that section.
Yeah, for sure. I almost thought about it for a minute there to have my wife meet me that at Whitmore, and I hiked everything out. But I was like, yeah, 3 or 4 trips climbing out of the canyon.
Yeah, that was one of my next questions, is what does that look like at the end, having never done it? Does somebody just drive down to that spot and pick you up, or how tough is it to get out of there?
No, it's a drive-up boat ramp, Pierce Ferry, okay, and Diamond Creek so far. But they're the only – Diamond Creek's the first one, 225 miles down the river. That's the first place you can access the canyon with a vehicle.
Well,
so you got to travel a long way.
Yeah, the one thing we've learned with having satellite phones on the river in the canyon is it's a little iffy getting a complete conversation out. So that that part might be a little wonky for us, but we're going to continue to try and make the connection for listeners to kind of live some of it vicariously with you. What are the dates of your trip?
I'm launching this Monday, December 6th, and I'm taking out, I think it's Wednesday, December 22nd.
Wow. All right, just before Christmas.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. All right. Tell people where to get more information for your tour company, Wild Utah Tours.
Well, they can just go to our website, wildutahtours.com, and feel free to give us a call anytime.
Mark Hodges, we look forward to hearing from you, and hopefully you figured out that satellite phone.
Well, I'm still waiting for it to arrive, but I've used some before, so hopefully I'll find a good spot in the canyon. Like you said, it might be a little tricky, but do my best to find a good spot, but I guess I'll kind of ends up being where I'm at. It's going to be where I'm at. So.
Yeah. Well, if you have any questions, just reach out to Russ at SkyCall. We'll get it taken care of. We got to take a break. When we come back, Navi jumps back on here. We'll talk about some fish bites for this week. Stay with us here on KSL Outdoors Radio.
I'm Dave Cauley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
All right, it is time for some fish bites here. I think Bob Grove is still with us. You there, Bob?
I'm still here.
All right. There's a guy that has a rod and reel that are just waiting to get used. I'll tell you that. Have you actually got the new gear out in a while?
Not in a while. I had it out on Lake Powell. That was back in August. That hasn't been out since.
Yeah.
I want Navi to give me some good ideas of where I can go down here in this part of the state.
Well,
you got weather. You can fish any day I want. I was out last weekend and I got cold feet.
Which doesn't happen with you very often. What happened there? Was the weather that bad?
I think I'm getting old. I don't think the circulation in my feet's what it used to be, but the water was cold.
Yeah.
If you want to pick up our story, we were in the last days of my float tube class, which ended the Saturday after Thanksgiving. We went down to Minersville, which is an old haunt that we like to visit. Big Fish Dave had a reason to be in St. George, and so he researched it for us on the way back, and it was fishing great. So we targeted Minersville, which is a great fishery. I knew they had a fish kill. They had some temperature problems in August, as most of our lakes did, particularly down south there. And they had a number of dead fish, and so I wasn't scheduling it. But after his research, he did. He caught 13 fish an hour, which is a really good rate. So we went on down there with bellies full of turkey, and we didn't do very well. I didn't have anybody with a zero, but I had a lot of ones. I only got 5. If you want to know how bad it was, I only got a 5, and Big Fish Dave only got 1.
Wow.
We had a lot of people with more than one, but nobody more than five, which is a terrible day, as you well know.
Yeah.
So, look, what I discovered, Minersville is such a premier fishery. It's just one of the best FOTU fisheries in our state, and it's a long ways from Salt Lake, but worth the drive. The water color's been off for quite some time because of the drought. The water's down a bit. There are some really big fish in it, and I only tied into one that was of any size. The fish I did catch were quite small. They weren't very deep. The ones we were catching were about 5 to 6 feet under, but the fish on the radar was down around 12 feet. And it was cold and, more importantly, windy. And you know how that's a real nemesis for float tubers is a wind, a steady wind. It's really hard to keep the flies moving in a way that would, not deflect the fish. I always say first rule, anything that causes my fly to look atypical renders it fishless.
Yeah.
So to keep it in the position and at the speed and the strategies that we normally use was far more difficult with the wind, and I think it impacted us greatly. And I do think the fish numbers are down, and I say that because I usually get quite large fish out of there, and I only got one large fish.
Interesting. Last half hour, we were talking about this nasty situation on the Madison up around Hebgen Lake, and the fact that it was particularly devastating right now because the brown trout are spawning. I just wanted to mention to our listeners, and you'll hear some of the audio here, I think, maybe, that the Division of Wildlife Resources has posted a video that gives you a little glimpse underwater of the spawning behavior of brown trout, which you might find interesting. And I have posted it over to our Facebook page if you want to take a look at it. The other thing the division was talking about this week that has to do with spawning fish, Navi, is that these 3 weeks between Thanksgiving and mid-December are typically when whitefish are spawning up at Bear Lake. And they said it's a great time to be up there fishing for the whitefish. And somebody immediately asked the Division of Wildlife on their Facebook right after they posted the article whether whitefish were actually good to eat.
Oh, man, I have so much information on this, Tim. First off, let me tell you that whitefish are unique in that they spawn differently in different bodies of water. All of them descended from the same fish in what was Lake Bonneville. But as they receded in these residue fisheries, Bear Lake being one of them, Weber River another, and so forth, Curon up to our Canadian border, every whitefish spawns at a different month. The Weber River fish spawn in January, February. The Madison River spawn in May. And, of course, right now is when they're spawning at Bear Lake, and they're delicious. By the way, anybody who thinks whitefish is an edible just had never tried one. Of all the fish to eat, it is the one you want because it's the one that's not in anywhere danger of being overcome by anglers. Anglers don't target the whitey, so there are plenty of them. If you're going to eat one, that's the one, and they're absolutely delicious. They're more meat than bone. People say they're bony. It's the opposite. We say whitefish have shoulders, which means they fight really hard. But, yes, it is true. Whitefish can't jump.
Just in case you were wondering.
In regards to the Madison, that damn water got busted and the damn man can't fix it and now the river's in deep trouble. That's a very serious problem.
I know. And you just wanted to say that damn water and that damn those damn people up there.
I got to do something because I'm pretty cranky about it.
I know. One more little footnote here to fishing for the whitefish spawning up at Bear Lake. They said concentrate your efforts along rocky shorelines in water only 5 to 15 feet deep because that's where they like to spawn. Navi, we got to cut you loose so you can get back to class. Thanks, buddy.
All right. Hey, thanks, Tim. I can't wait to see you down there. Let's say go Utes.
Go Utes, and we'll see you along the way. If we don't, we'll see you at the hotel. We'll take a break. ABC News at the top of the hour. On the other side, Faith Jolly from the Division of Wildlife as we head for hour number two. Bob Grove is going to stick around, so stay with us.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.